GM, everybody, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, you bet damn sure you came to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel and talk about revitalizing the flywheel, bringing that magic we love back to DeFi. We have on Jay Badvani from Royco, who's telling us everything Royco and giving us some hot takes about DeFi and what it will take to get to trillions of TVL at the end of the day. We kept on saying capital P primitive throughout the episode because we're like, wow, this shit is like really cool. that's what it came down to. Kit, do a quick premiere on this one.
Not only that, you know, DeFi has been in this, I don't want to say lack of innovation, because I know the builders out there are building hard and I know innovation is difficult. Though this project, I feel, is pushing the boundaries again. Like, it feels exciting again for me.
Yeah, I can't wait till it comes out, honestly. But until then...
Just next month, right?
Yeah, just... perhaps. But for now, we have the pod for you to listen to get everything you need to know, and then some. But before we get into it, make sure you go ahead, give us a like, subscribe, hit that bell button on YouTube, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me, yours truly, on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. We're going lefty. We're going lefty because I fractured my fucking Let's get into it. Everybody, welcome to Flywheel. I'm your host DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and this time around, for the first time, I feel like this is long overdue, Jay. We have Jay from Royco, Waymont, formerly Rarion, DeFi OG and legend, has seen the ups and downs, the triumphs and everything in between. Jay, it's great to have you on, and it's great to cover everything Royco today.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Yeah. For our viewers at home that may not be familiar with your lore, can you give a bit of background and we can sum it up quick at what is the motivation behind Royco? Like, how did Royco come to be and a bit of your background?
Cool. Yeah. I'll start with background. Then we can kind of talk about how it gave way to Royco. For me, got into crypto back in 2016. My boss at the time told me, hey, you're in ninth grade. You should just dump it all into ETH. I thought it was pretty stupid, but ended up working out well. 2017 comes around, start participating in all the ICOs, had a lot of fun in it. So when 2018 came around and DeFi, on-chain finance started to become a thing, MakerDAO launching, conversations around like, hey, how can we decentralize Ether Delta? And obviously I was a huge user of all of these things. At the same time, lots of people wanted to be able to access the chain throughout 2017. So I started building a mobile wallet that made it super easy to buy and sell cryptos. 2018, obviously nobody wanted to buy and sell cryptos, ends up getting acquired by a firm called MyCrypto. MyCrypto was then later acquired by MetaMask. You might know MyCrypto as a fork of my Ether wallet. It was a venture-backed fork of my Ether wallet. So stick around there for a couple years after the acquisition. But 2020 comes around and now I'm a senior in high school with a few years in DeFi under my belt. And I say, hey, look, I want to go and start a DeFi protocol. We didn't really know what we wanted to build, but it starts as a yield aggregator. And that's how Rari Capital started was, hey, look, we have some of cash laying around on the acquisition side of things. Let's build a great yield aggregator. And then that basically gave way to basically we issued, like launched a token. We did all of these really cool things. And once the token distribution stopped, once everything stopped, it was like, okay, well, what do we do now? And the TVL has shrunk a ton, like 99% and everything. I was like, well, what do we do now? And it was during these times that we were trying to get listed on Compound and Aave and all of them so that people could lever up on their yield aggregator positions. I was like, wait, why are these guys telling us what we can and can't borrow and lend? Let's go build a platform where you can borrow and lend anything. And that was the idea behind Fuse, which is later what Rory became known for. So this was really exciting. The rest of Rory's history is pretty well documented at this point of throughout that following year, the growth from like $0 in the protocol to $1.5 billion at its peak, trading at 800 times earnings, realizing, oh shit, what do we do if we're trading at 800 times earnings? Going and running an M&A process, ends up getting acquired by the Tribe DAO, at which point I step back and really start thinking, what do I want to build next? And spent a lot of time just hacking on all these different things. FTX falls. I realize, wow, custody is still broken. We start Waymont, which is trying to solve custody by introducing inheritance policies, transaction policies, hack detection systems to keep people safe on chain so that they don't need to put their assets inside of FTX. And what we learned is custody is a hard business to monetize, right? So we started the company 18 months ago, again, right after FTX fell. We built up an amazing client base of all these different high net worth individual whales. And then how do you turn that into a $1 billion company? So we started trying things, right? We started trying to figure out, how do we do that? We have a great deposit base. Subscription fees aren't going to do it by themselves. And one of the things that worked best was being able to bring these folks deals. Not necessarily venture deals, but the thing that worked best was private liquidity deals. So early stage protocols looking to bootstrap their liquidity, they come to private individuals and they say, hey, look, we'll give you some really good yield to come in and provide liquidity into our protocol. These deals, you're making 100% plus. They are crazy deals that are happening, right? And there's new ones every single month. It is, right? It's crazy. So we said, we're going to be a big user here and we'll do it cheaper than everybody else because our whales are competing against a bunch of funds and these funds need a higher rate of return. Our whales are happy making 50%. We're so happy making 70%, right? And we started doing these deals and what we learned is there's so much inefficiency. Why are these projects paying 75% plus? Why are they paying 100% plus? Why is all of this happening? The liquidity happening in the private markets is being organized super inefficiently. Because the way the projects go and get this liquidity is through the 20 people that they know. There's no discovery. There's no price discovery. There's no competition. There's no nothing. So this was interesting to us. And then we started looking at the public markets for liquidity. We started looking at somebody like Compound. Compound is spending an absurd amount of comp every single day for it just to incentivize people to come in and lend. How much are they overpaying? I'm pretty certain that Compound could decrease their emissions by 50%. And most of the TVL would stay, right? So it was like, okay, some public protocols are overpaying for liquidity. And then on the other hand, you have some public protocols who maybe if they knew that if they spent like 20% more in emissions, that they could go and get another $1 billion in TVL, then maybe they would take that decision. Maybe it would make sense, right? All of this to say the private markets for liquidity and the public markets for liquidity, extremely in disarray, right? No organization, no competition, no nothing, no efficiency. That's what Royco aims to solve is Royco aims to bring efficiency to all liquidity on chain.
That's a great backstory.
All right, guys, we're done with the podcast. Let's just stop it here.
Yeah, it's over. Pack it home, boys. But yeah, can we go over basically step by step, what's the problem that you guys are solving? So basically how I understand, there are projects that want TVL, that need liquidity, and there are whales that have the capital, but trying to organize and coordinate that happens in like opaque situations, like it's everything's mispriced. And like you said, there's no price discovery of going on here with these deals. Can we like break down what's happening and what Royco is like solving here? And why is liquidity important anyway?
Yep. So how I think about Royco is it's a two-sided marketplace. On one side, you have liquidity providers. And on one side, you have liquidity seekers or incentive providers. You can call them really whatever you want, right? So liquidity providers, and for the sake of this discussion, we'll say incentive providers, right? First of all, why is somebody an incentive provider? Why do people care about liquidity, right? Why is it so important that these folks, and why are they spending billions of dollars every year on liquidity? It's because liquidity is at the center of everything that we do in crypto, right? Whether you're an actual blockchain who's powered by proof of stake, and you need to basically pay people to come in and stake, right? Or let's say you're a DEX and you need liquidity so that people can actually come in and buy and sell things using that liquidity. Let's say you're a lending market. It's important to have liquidity mm-hmm. so that people can lend and borrow. On every piece of the crypto stack outside of like maybe gaming and social, we see the need for liquidity. And these things, we can go one by one through the things that I just mentioned, whether it be like blockchains themselves, whether it be DEXs, whether it be lending markets. There's no price discovery around the incentives here, right? So usually if you're a blockchain, a DEX or whatever, the way you're going to incentivize is say, hey, look, I'm going to give you 500 comp per day. I'm going to give you 500 ETH per day in rewards. I'm going to give you whatever in rewards per day. And you cross your finger and you hope that works, right? No price discovery, no nothing. And the only way to figure out how you can pull those levers is by A/B testing in real time mm-hmm. on the order of magnitude of billions of dollars, right? Let's increase our incentives next week. Let's see what that happens. That is scary to protocols who have billions of dollars in TVL that they don't want to lose. Now, on the other side, it's not only whales, right? It's everybody operating on chain. You have retail individuals who want to participate in this yield. Yeah, you have whales. You have all of the different funds, right? Everybody who's doing stuff on chain and seeking yield on chain would be better off by having and participating in this yield through the Royco markets, right? So those are kind of the characteristics of both sides of the market. Now, Royco aims to bring them together. Here's what's really cool about bringing them together is surely you can say, hey, look, yeah, I'm just going to deposit into Compound Finance. That's it. But now imagine a world, again, with Royco, where you can say, hey, I'm going to deposit into Compound Finance, but I'm also interested in depositing into Aave and this and that if the yield exceeds what I'm getting in Compound Finance. This is kind of the role that certain yield aggregators have played in the past. But what we're trying to do is create a marketplace specifically. So what you can imagine will come about is an order book for every single yielding thing on chain, right? An order book where they can see, wow, if we hit 15% yield, we'll get $1 billion. If we go to 20% yield, we'll get $5 billion. And if we go to 3 or 2% yield, then we lose all of it, right? So they know that they aren't going to go below 2% or else it's all over. And then they're going to optimize around whatever makes sense for them. So again, with Royco, it's just about bringing this efficiency and bringing this data to the protocol so that they can make the right decisions.
So I think this was such a, like, what really clicked for me as I was reading through the docs is, like, you know, obviously Frax Finance is a huge incentivization provider and via the Vodia markets, like, largely. And what Royco does is basically now allowing the liquidity side to have a say, because Frax yep. basically just put up a bid, right? And then just, it's just a sleepy bid, only one price, and then people just come and slam into it. And yep. No one was able to put an ask for the liquidity on exactly. top. So now what Royco did was came in and was able to create that ask layer, which I thought was super clever. My one question to you is then, like, but not all liquidity, or rather not all incentives are created equal. So how do you kind of solve for that? Like, is it just literally based on if my token is shittier, I have a higher threshold to pay to unlock my liquidity?
Yeah. I mean, it's up to protocols and it's up to users. Protocols can come in and say, hey, we want to incentivize with points. We want to incentivize with non-transferable tokens. We want to incentivize with transferable tokens. Mm. And then users can see, go through this catalog and understand what do they want? What don't they want, right? And we're not going to be playing any central force of saying, hey, this market sounds good, this market sounds bad. It's going to be entirely up to the users.
Oh, so you're envisioning multiple order books for each individual project.
So there will be one order book for each yielding opportunity. So for example, you'd have an order book for, like, let's say the compound ETH market, right? There you'd see yield on one hand, liquidity on the other hand. And you'd be able to say, hey, look, I want to get in at this yield. Hey, I want to get in at this yield. I want to get in at this yield. That only works for compound ETH because users have committed to providing liquidity in that range, right?
Oh, I see.
Now, maybe somebody can do that and also set a limit order inside of Aave ETH market or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's completely up to the user.
Got it. And there's almost like a built-in, or someone could come in and build on top of Royco and have like a yield aggregator effectively, right? And
exactly.
If I'm willing to push my risk threshold a little bit further, but at base rate, always come back to compound and rest here. And then exactly. If there's an opportunity above like, you know, 90%, which is like what gets me to move out of compound, then it'll go there and then it'll come back.
Oh, very exactly.
Cool. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, sorry. So I thought it was interesting what you said before. It's like you said, like, oh, going back to yield aggregators. It's like, oh, you've kind of come full circle back from when you started from Rari. So what you're doing with Royco now, hell, they both start with Rs. yeah. So this is, kid, and also I never thought about it in the same, of like when I was researching this, how you said like, hey, this is actually putting an ask side on the bid. The bid is like people sending incentives, but liquidity providers never had the opportunity to have their ask, to have their say. And basically what Royco is doing is giving an opportunity for liquidity providers to play in the game. Wow, this sounds really powerful, Jay. You really cooked something up here.
Yeah. I definitely think this is, you know, again, I'm going to bust it out. I think this is going to be a capital P primitive. It's going to be a capital P primitive. Everyone's going to have this, and it's going to be like a no-brainer because like our old school way of doing liquidity farming or liquidity mining, because I imagine like all these protocols are set up like their shop in the bazaar and they're just screaming out paying 20%, anyone coming paying 20, and then like, you know, all the liquidity providers just walking around just seeing, you know, window shopping until they see something good, right? Like
exactly.
How inefficient is that versus a fully order book when everything is there and price for the taking? But what you know Jay said was more critical is the liquidity optimization. You get to see the liquidity depth based on how much incentives you're willing to pay, which I think is crazy. Like you see so many limits, like I just got to pay 5% more and I unlock double of my TVL. That's crazy. Why are people doing that? Yep. Good for me, right? I'll pay 5% more and get double. So like that I'm interested to see. Yeah.
I'm wondering how the UI looks for this. I'm wondering how this like looks like in action. Like, I guess, like, how far
is there a sneak peek?
Is there a sneak? Like, how far are you along with coming along with this? Are you guys in beta? I mean, I know you guys have like a list where people can sign up. Like, is it actually working? Do you have any feedback if it is working?
Yep. So the protocol has not been launched yet.
Okay.
What we have is a wait list. The wait list has, I think, $500 million plus on it. Some crazy number. And what we've been working on is finalizing the protocol. The protocol itself will be ready in about just over 1 month. And we're one of many contributors as Waymont to the creation of the Royco protocol, right? So this is different than some other protocols that you may be aware of where it's an extremely centralized development force. We're going with an extremely decentralized development force. Now, there's a lot of different reasons why, which we can unpack in a second. But to go back to this is the protocol will be ready in 1 month. And then soon after, the application will probably go live, right? Application being Waymont will go and create the flagship, I hope, front end for accessing the Royco protocol, right? And this front end, I'll show you guys it after the podcast. It's pretty cool. It's basically done at this point, where you can basically go and view all of the markets. You open up all of the pages for each of the markets. You can see the yield. In fact, you can go and like modify the FDV to get to your own APY. So you don't need to just go with what we're saying if you disagree. And you can go and set either market or limit orders. The only thing we actually are still working on is the order book itself, but the rest of it's already there.
Like the order book visualization or the logic for the order? Okay.
The visualization, the logic of these limit orders, it's all there.
Got it. Could you also share with us about the locking mechanism, like how you can lock up for rates and how you can sell those lock positions?
Yeah. So this is actually something that currently isn't in what's going to be the first protocol. The reason for context for the viewers is in one of the original Royco designs, we had functionality such that you could go and deposit in a market, and if the market is locked, then you get issued an IOU or some asset that you could then go and do whatever you want to go and trade with it. What we realized is that this functionality does not need to be enshrined at the protocol level. And instead, we should enable developers to write this functionality however they want, right? Instead of us going and writing this functionality. So maybe down the road, we'll write like a template or something. But again, the protocol itself is actually very simple and extremely, extremely unopinionated, right? Which is the reason we got rid of it, because we want the protocol to be extremely simple, immutable, right? We don't want to be in charge. Nobody should ever be in charge. None of the contributors should be in charge. It should be completely immutable. It should exist everywhere. And that's really the goal here.
Got it. And can you give other examples and use cases for Royco? I know we went over a few, like supplying liquidity, but what are some other ones? And, you know, what are the ones you're most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, it's all subsets of liquidity, right? Because at the end of the day, we think most of crypto and most of the value in crypto is centered around liquidity, right? So some of the interesting use cases that we've been thinking a lot about is how can we use this to effectively increase liquidity inside of AMMs and inside of DEXs, right? If you look at it, why some people speculate that the reason crypto coins are so down bad and some of the reasons that altcoins are so down bad is because of these really parasitic market making agreements. Back in DeFi summer, we had pool twos. Pool twos didn't stay a thing. Why weren't they a thing? Is because market making was more efficient. What happens if you had an efficient force that was able to go and replace the market makers? That's what I hope Royco can be inside of this DEX vertical, right? And I hope that we can basically take these yields that the market makers are secreting from us, from retail, and put it back on chain and make it accessible by all in a way that we can all compete for that yield, right? This is pretty cool. Some of the other things that we're talking about is a lot of these LRTs, right? They're constantly competing for liquidity amongst one another. One of the biggest things we hear from them is, hey, soon we're going to need locked liquidity, right? Because they want to go and make deals with AVSs. They want to go be able to do something like what EtherFi did with Lagrange. Hey, we're going to give you security for $600 million for the next however long. They can't make these deals if they don't know what their liquidity is going to be like in 6 months, in 12 months, in 18 months. So by developing a locker, whatever you want to call it, with Royco and being able to control the incentives with Royco, now suddenly they can capture that locked liquidity and ensure they're paying the cheapest amount because everybody's going to be competing to do so at the cheapest price, right? This is very cool because now it has massive benefits for the entire Eigenlayer AVS ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't even one of the intents when creating the protocol. So these are some applications of the protocol. But then you can also imagine, and my mental model for thinking about Royco isn't necessarily just, hey, how can we help bootstrap and maintain this liquidity? But look, as we said, everything is liquidity. And similarly, everything is incentives. And we've built this order book for liquidity and incentives. So think about something like a lending market, for example. What is a lending market? You're lending something, that's your liquidity. Your incentive, that's your interest rate, right? Could you hypothetically use Royco to go and build a lending market? Maybe. Another one. Could you go and use Royco to go and build a DEX? Imagine your liquidity, that's what you're using to buy. Your incentive is what you're getting for whatever you're buying. Again, what this is it's an order book for liquidity, but there is pretty much all of finance is encapsulated inside of this order book for liquidity. And there's a lot of advantages to basically having like one shared standard for all of these things, right? And having liquidity concentrate inside of one shared standard. That's where I hope we can take Royco over a longer term. Shorter term, definitely the focus is on helping these projects that currently exist.
And where do you plan on launching Royco?
Yeah, we're figuring that out right now.
Oh, good. Okay.
Arbitrum.
ETH mainnet? Solana?
These guys keep saying it will be an EVM. It will be EVM at first. We've narrowed it down to a couple major chains. We've spoken to now over 100 projects who want to come and use Royco. So we're mapping out how much they want to go and spend on incentives, how excited we are about each of them, and we'll go based on whatever projects want to be able to come and use Roika.
Yeah. Okay. Just going back on what you were saying about the external applications, I just kind of realized that you can really abstract it away and just be like, hey, I'm going to come in. I want to have, say, $100 million worth of ETH, and I'm willing to pay you 10% APY. Come to me, because as like an individual, right? Like, yep. I want to effectively borrow this liquidity for me to like go short it or use it as collateral, yep, for me to borrow something else or whatever, right? That's also an abstraction. I don't have to be a protocol. I just have to be an incentive provider, right? Exactly. I just got to come with a rate to pay. Oh, I didn't. That is a pretty cool abstraction. It's almost like a peer-to-peer ad hoc market. Yep. Right, for the individual side, not the protocol level. But I guess my question to you is, you know, you created Royco out of necessity because Waymont had issues monetizing custody. So how do you plan on doing that here with Royco?
Yeah, I think that you can imagine at some point in the short to medium term, our front end will add a fee, just as a front end fee for maintaining, hopefully, one of the greatest front ends for the Royco protocol.
Got it. And have you thought about the fee structure?
Not yet. This is just something that we think we can do at a later point.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. What has it been? Kate, do you have another question?
No. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to go to Waymont. And what has the experience been with running Waymont? I remember back in 2021, 2022, when you just started Waymont and you were telling me about it and everything that you were doing. What has that evolution been? What's it like being in the custody business? Because I feel like it's one of the most essential parts of the whole ecosystem. And it's interesting to hear that it's actually like hard to like be profitable on its own. And I just think of like Coinbase custody and how successful they are, because they had the exchange and they built custody for it, and now they do custody for BlackRock and all the ETFs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll let you take it.
I mean, I would push back on the notion of like even Coinbase custody being extremely successful, right? They charge some tiny amount of bips every single year for these ETFs, right? I think it was something like they're planning on making $50 million a year from the current ETFs at the current rate. Right, which maybe that's fine, but they're literally taking on so much risk, right? They're taking on the risk of managing and holding tens of billions of dollars and hopefully one day hundreds of billions of dollars, right? So custody is just an extremely hard business, which is why you see one of two things. You see a lot of M&A inside of the custody segment, right? Most custody businesses fail to go and monetize, which is why they end up getting acquired. That leads me to the second point, which is most of the time that you see a custody business, it's actually going alongside another more profitable like revenue center, right? So for Coinbase, it's an auxiliary service, not because custody is a great business, but because it will help drive trading volumes to the Coinbase exchange, right? Which is revenue center of their business.
The money's on the
exchange.
So
again, I hope that Royco becomes our revenue center for the Waymont operating company.
Got it.
Interesting. You kind of did it in reverse. That's cool. And, you know, Dave actually had a question about Barrachain. Did you want to ask that, Dave?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was curious how Royco works alongside other protocols, because other chains and other ecosystems, because Barrachain's all about proof of liquidity and all the incentives are on chain. So taking from this interview, does it just create like an ask side to the proof of liquidity and all those incentives? Like how would Royco fit into Barrachain theoretically?
Yeah. Honestly, I think that proof of liquidity is a great, great idea.
Yeah.
I think that what the Barrachain team has done there is really fantastic. I have not spent enough time thinking specifically about how Royco and Barrachain will work together. But I do think that what you can think of is like Royco is playing a similar role to Barrachain and the proof of liquidity specifically outside of the Barrachain ecosystem. right, in terms of being able to coordinate this liquidity. And within the bear chain ecosystem, I think it remains to be seen what that looks like specifically.
Got it. And where do you see, oh, go ahead, Kit.
And speaking of all these projects, and like, since, you know, Jake is inundated with like private deals that he has to basically be the broker and middleman, I wanted to learn a bit more, like, how is that market like right now? How did they come across your table? And then kind of what is your process to disseminate that offer to like the whales right now?
Yeah, honestly, like we have not been focusing on that side of the business right now. I'd say the realities of Waymont right now is the entire team is pushing forward on our contributions to the Royco protocol. And pretty much everything else is in slow motion.
Yeah, initially it was a big deal. And then you guys slowed, and then you realize you should build out Royco to, you know, productize this business unit. I see. Okay.
And now we spend most of our time talking to protocols, projects who are looking for liquidity, but on a bigger scale than some of these private offerings, and hoping to do so via Royco.
How big are a scale we talking?
A very large scale.
Very large. Figs. Okay, got it.
10. you mentioned before how Waymont is one of many contributors to the Royco protocol. So what's the Royco developer ecosystem like? How are other developers contributing to the ecosystem? And like, what opportunities do you see for developers to contribute?
Yeah, I think it's still pretty early on in this ecosystem, right? I think that obviously Royco as an entire concept is extremely, extremely early, right?
Yeah, of course.
What that developer ecosystem looks like is essentially folks who we've chatted with, who have come across it in some way, maybe even in some just tweet thread that led to them reaching out, that sent them down a rabbit hole of people extremely interested about the future of liquidity, right? So yeah, you have like independent contributors, but then you also have folks who are trying to build businesses on and around the Royco protocol, right? Building specialized front ends to do certain things, building specialized applications to do certain things. Like, for example, earlier we chatted about yield aggregation on top of Royco and how big of an opportunity that may be. There's a couple of teams who are considering coming in and building yield aggregation on top of Royco and have specific asks and specific contributions they want to make to the underlying protocol to make sure it works well with the yield aggregator that they want to go and build. So, to be honest, the way that I would describe the current developer environment of Royco is extremely early, but pretty surreal to just see the level of excitement and just the competence of the builders that are involved.
Got it. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. I just had a thought about the product a bit further. And for, you know, liquidity that's currently sitting on, I'm sorry, for like the VECRV or like VLCVX, right? They are directing a lot of emissions. So I'm trying to think, like, how would, you know, Royco, some like Frax, for example, use Royco in a way that they use, you know, a Votium? Like, would they bribe on Royco to the Votium people to then direct the emissions to their pool? And like, have you thought about all the bribes market and how does it kind of go for their lunch money?
To be honest, not deeply. Two thoughts here. One is there's a ton of different avenues of how Frax specifically could go and use Royco, right? Mm-hmm. Even something as simple as like SFrax paying out some APY. How much more would they get if they paid out a little bit more in SFrax? How much more SFrax would they get if they paid out less, right? Or how much would that decrease the amount of SFRAX or the total supply of SFRAX? These are answers that we currently don't have. We don't know how elastic or inelastic the depositors into SFRAX are. Mm-hmm. The second is on this idea of bribing or vote bribing in specific, right? I think in the future, you can imagine one of two things. The next convex, the next whatever, being built as a Royco market. There's no reason it shouldn't, right? You don't need to go build an entire protocol from the ground up to do your liquid staked bribe token. you can have that entirely be powered by Royco, and it'll actually be more efficient. Now, the second thing is a little bit more provocative, which is how these bribes are being done and everything is taking advantage of basically some economic inefficiencies right now, right? You can buy something lower than it's supposed to be, lower than the bribe, and now the bribe is, and now the bribe holders are basically, either the bribe holders are on the hook at a loss, or the people who are issuing the bribes are on the hook at a loss, right? It isn't an entirely efficient force. With Royco, it's entirely efficient, right? Because what's happening is you're cutting out this middleman, you're enabling the bribes with whatever you need, right? To go directly to the LP's hands instead of these gauges, which are then going to incentives, which then incentivize LPs, right? You cut out this middleman, which should be a lot better for everybody involved because there will be less people taking fees in the middle.
Yep, 100%. Like, you know, when I was doing my research for Frax back in the day, it was all about, for $1 a bribe, how much did they get back, right? It's always more than a dollar. But we always talk about, this is an efficient market, everybody. Efficient with randomized capitalization. But why are they able to pay a dollar and get more than a dollar?
Exactly.
You know, like, that shouldn't have been the case. And I think Royco is going to come in and pretty much flatten the market completely so that the liquidity providers are going to get their share back.
And I'm just thinking back to our interview with the My Guys, and when Benjamin kept on saying cost of capital, cost of capital,
cost of capital,
that was just like ingrained in my brain, that phrase. And this will help like improve the cost of capital for both like for protocols and for
definitely.
Yeah. You know what else? Not only the cost of capital, but the discovery funnel into liquidity is going to be different.
Yes.
Now. Because if I'm doing a stable coin, right, and I am better than SDAI and SFRAX, I can go particularly into that market. And I would imagine your UI is going to allow me to bid for like a special premier slot on top, like some advertisement placement or some featured placements, right? It's like, I know you're in this pool, come over to my pool, which is a better version and is stable and is audited, and I'm paying up more rate. So it's like a nicely targeted advertisement to the right kind of users. So you could effectively create a liquidity profile for every single wallet, right? If you know this wallet is like a super degen that they literally go to, like, you know, they are a DeFi summer nostalgist and they want to go for pool twos only, then you're able to offer these guys some crazy ass shit coin farms and they would go versus someone who only does Aave compound and like very tight stuff.
Yep.
Now that persona is there too. So you now have this segmentation of liquidity profiles, which I think is going to be very interesting.
I do think you're touching on something like really important here, which is the distribution element and how valuable it will be to be a front end for the Royco protocol, right? This is one of the reasons that Waymont is going and building one of the front ends for the Royco protocol. But just to break it down a little bit, how it all actually works is the markets are all indexed in what we call this open liquidity graph, right? In the same way that you can think about Farcaster and their graph of the social data that anybody can plug into and build their own front end on, we're building the open liquidity graph.
Again, open liquidity graph. I like that.
Thank you. And the goal is similar to the Farcaster, right? With this open social graph of what can we do to enable applications, whether they be interfaces, yield aggregators, whatever, to go and index all of these markets. Now, here's what I personally hope happens, is that everybody comes in and indexes them. So when I say everybody, I mean, hopefully one day you open up your MetaMask experience and next to your ETH, it'll show you all of the different Royco markets. One day you open up your Fireblocks or your Coinbase custody or whatever it is, and it'll index all of the different Royco markets and show you your different yield earning opportunities with each of them. This is going to be critical to the success of Royco, because here's what can happen then, is the second these integrations start going, it's only a matter of time before every wallet and exchange is going to need to have a Royco integration in order to stay ahead of the curve. Right? Or else people are going to flock to their competitors that do have a Royco integration. And here's when the Royko protocol becomes the most valuable, is because now for the protocols, what are they going to do? They cannot go and launch their incentive campaign without Royko, because then they'll be missing out on a MetaMask integration. They'll be missing out on a Robinhood integration. They'll be missing out on all of the distributors, all of the supply side that will be aggregated with the sole purpose of directing liquidity into their protocols. So the really cool thing here is it has this massive flywheel effect in terms of
the liquidity
and the distribution. Yeah. And the distribution that will be created through this. Does that make sense?
100%.
A sufficiently decentralized liquidity marketplace.
Yeah. But now then that came to my mind. It's like, well, that's kind of, it's going to be a little bit hard on Waymont if your guys' front end is no longer needed and like MetaMask or any of these institutions can just tap into Royko at the protocol level, right? Because like you said,
really?
Yeah, you know, it could be. We're also building a paid API that they can go and plug into.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
You thought
it's always better. It's always there.
You thought it's always better for people to buy and build.
No. I mean, it was a genuine thought because, like, you know, if these institutions are a shot, like, you know, these institutions are going to have to make a decision of buy or build, right? And if something's already out there, they're just going to want to buy it, right? It's super easy. This API, and you can just, it's API for liquidity. Wow.
Yep.
What a world we live in. What a world we live in. That's a liquidity API.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question then, Jay. Like, what kind of keeps you up at night? What are some of your big worries and about this project?
Yeah. I think the biggest worry is basically having too much demand on the liquidity provider side, right? Because here's what you can imagine. And like if you think about Eigenlayer, for example, right, there's now maybe like $10 billion staked inside of Eigenlayer. With $10 billion staked inside of Eigenlayer, how much yield can they actually produce to sustain that $10 billion? I'm afraid the second that the new token mania stops, the real yield is going to be much smaller than people imagine. And that will lead to a lot of people leaving the Eigenlayer ecosystem. Now, I worry, obviously, to a lesser degree than somebody like Eigenlayer, but I worry that we may not be able to match the demand that we will have that comes into the protocol because it can scale extremely fast and the yield that we'll need to produce in order to keep it all is going to be quite high.
Got it.
Interesting.
Here's why that maybe keeps me up at night, but here's the reason that I hope it doesn't, right? Is, for example, earlier in this conversation, you said, imagine a new stablecoin comes along and wants to go in and incentivize, right? And basically puts out all their incentives, and now they're able to attract a ton of liquidity. I think that's what's so cool, is we drive down the barrier for innovation, right? If we assume that everything in crypto requires liquidity, we've just made that liquidity accessible to everybody. And because it's accessible to everybody, there should be more yield generated because there'll be more protocols, there'll be more projects, there'll be more people trying things. And I think that's really exciting to me, is just like, okay, if this works and if we can do our job, there'll be so much more net economic activity happening on chain.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I feel like it's not necessarily, you know, a concern for maintaining a highest yield, because everyone on Eigenlayer is indeed searching for a highest yield. But I feel like for something like on Royko, like you said, there are different liquidity personas, right? One only wants to do really safe Aave compound, while another is a, you know, DeFi summer nostalgist who wants to ape into every pool too. So then, you know, it's not so yield APR percent that you need to maintain, but just continuous yield opportunities that comes out. Like literally the count of the different types and the diversity of this yield opportunity is what you're kind of concerned about. But you brought up a great point. You just alleviated a huge concern for a lot of people or a lot of projects launching their own own protocol and having to go through the headache and buying CVX and locking CVX, all that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Just very excited.
I was going to ask: is there a TradFi equivalent to this that exists right now, or is this a complete novel primitive that can only exist on chain?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure.
I think it is. No, there's always the middleman. I feel like the quote unquote money market is a little bit like this, right? When people are able to kind of take money out of the money market and go use it with other stuff. Or when you deposit your money into the bank, it's like they take the money and go do it with other stuff. You know, it's kind of like that, but you're just getting the worst of the worst of the worst deals. So Royco just really closes that spread to just, you know, zero. So Royco, the protocol itself, charges no revenue capture on like the incentive side, like or on the liquidity side.
That is my understanding.
Wow. Damn, this really is going
to
be.
There's no race to zero if it's already at zero, guys.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, there's no way it could be replaced now. It could really be a primitive.
Oh, yeah, I was going to also. Cool.
And I would.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, kid. Mm-hmm. No, you go.
I was just thinking, like, liquidity now could be managed on a per block basis, right?
Yep.
Literally, like, people could make bids for liquidity on a per block basis and pay literally as you go and not have to allocate. I'm going to allocate, you know, 100 million of my tokens towards this, and this is going to run for 6 months, and here's how you're going to earn it, right? This is literally, you're able to do A/B testing so quickly, almost on a per block basis as well too, to really have the most efficient market. I think that is kind of the end state that you want to reach out to, is everyone is just having like a liquidity specialist, and all they do is just, they go on Royco, they have all the data and analytics specifically for Royco, and just analyzing the markets and offering like the right yield at any time. It's like, I'm just imagining like an ad network, except like I'm just sick. Running it. Yeah, right. I'm just thinking about that. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
One of the interesting things that somebody actually pitched me on yesterday was, hey, look, we have this platform Royco, which will enable all of these yield earning positions. On the other hand, you have these LPs that exist inside of Waymont, right? These high net worth individuals. Mm-hmm. At some point in the future, would it make sense for Waymont to go and build an investment advisory service where we help these whales, we help people coming in the door with Waymont to go and allocate their capital between all the different Royco markets? You can think of it something like a yield aggregator, but much more actively managed and done with the client's discretion of whatever they really want to be able to go and do. So this would be a pretty cool idea, and it actually maps out pretty well to TradFi, right? This is a role that TradFi emphasizes a lot and makes a lot of money in TradFi. So certainly not a focus anytime soon, but similar to what you're saying of, hey, look, there will be people who come and industrialize certain pieces of the Royco stack, whether that be on the incentive provider side of things, but also it'll happen on the liquidity provider side of things.
Got it. Yeah. And this makes it a lot easier for these wealth managers to do their job as well too, right? Yeah.
Totally.
Go ahead, Dave.
So has there been a lot of institutional interest in Royco? And I was going to ask, like, what's been their appetite with Royco? And speaking more broadly about DeFi, what are your observations about institutional interest in DeFi, especially with the ETH ETF coming up?
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things that I've recently learned is a lot of specifically the US-based institutions, their hands are tied by what they can and can't do, right? Mm-hmm. By regulation, by a lot of this stuff. They can go and do stuff on chain. It's difficult for them to go and actually do certain things off chain. One of the really cool things about Royco is it abstracts this negotiation layer. For example, I'll give you some context here. It is illegal for US market makers to engage in some level of negotiations with token projects. That's why you don't see US market makers come in and market making token projects very frequently. Now, let's replace negotiation and creating these contracts with Royco. That's pretty cool, right? That will enable all of these US-based institutions to come in and once again participate in what they want to go and participate in. So I do hope that Royco acts as a forcing function to helping these institutions come in and onboard and use the chain in the ways that they want to be able to go and use. Now, in terms of the broader like DeFi institution, like my point of view on this is actually potentially negative, which is I don't want us to have a ton more institutions in the ecosystem. I think that generally they are overrated, that they are take a ton of time and energy and secrete a bunch of value from what otherwise can be an extremely value, like an extremely positive sum ecosystem, right? So like what I'm thinking of here is you think about like these current market making firms, these current VCs, these current hedge funds that are participating in on chain, right? They're going and they're playing for themselves. Right, they're going and getting all this yield off the chain. They're trying to go and do all of that. It is the people who are on chain. We need more of them, right? That's what would make me extremely happy, and that's what I hope Royco can do. Is maybe the institutions come on board through Royco, but they should be treated like everybody else, and they will be treated like everybody else, and alongside retail, instead of trying to get some edge by writing some legal agreement off chain.
I think this is what made DeFi Summer so magical, because it really did feel like the playing field was level for everyone. Everybody was, you know, it didn't matter if you're a huge market maker or like some dude in their mom's attic, like everybody was in the same pool too. And basically what you're trying to do with Royco is recreate that, but you're like democratizing yield through Royco. You're democratizing opportunity through the Royco protocol.
Exactly. And it's funny because I might have tweeted this. I don't remember, but I really do think that Royco can bring back DeFi Summer, because the yields are there, right? Like, it's not like the yields went away. Everybody acts on Twitter like the yields went away. They're just not happening on chain anymore. If we can put them back on chain, DeFi should be so bad.
Yeah, no one will see that coming.
Good point.
Yeah, you bring a good
point, because the liquidity. You bring a good point up
about. About institutions and like how much do they, and like more professional players, quote unquote, like how much do they really add to the space? But I'm like, when I say institutions though, what I'm thinking about is like more capital coming on chain. Like, how do we get like DeFi TVL to like a trillion? How do we get it to like the multiple trillions? Do you think we need institutional capital, or do you like by institution, like outside capital, or in your view, which sounds like it, we can like grow it from within and grow the pie from within, like using things like Royco.
Yeah, I think like the internet economy is in trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. The total assets inside of DeFi is $100 billion. We should first go get the internet economy, then TradFi will be begging on our door to get into DeFi. Right, there's still so much more to do, right? Like the fact that we still aren't using stable coins to go and pay at Amazon and online is like an epic failure, right?
Yeah,
and it's just like it feels like a coping mechanism to say that TradFi is going to be how our bags pump 5x, when in reality, if we actually do our job and capture the internet economy and this decentralized financial like ecosystem, we are going to do a much more than 5x.
So what do you mean by internet economy? Do you mean like e-commerce? Like what do you mean specifically by that? Everyday transactions?
I mean, everything that's happening online should be happening on chain, right? Specifically on the financial side of things. And that's just not the case today. And when that is the case, then I think the tables will have significantly turned.
Do you feel like that's a big reason why DeFi has stagnated and crypto has stagnated? Is because we haven't successfully gone after that segment of the internet economy, or the whole internet economy for that matter.
Yeah, I think so, right? It's like we've spent so much time trying to like tokenize all of these things in the real world, when in reality there's an entire landscape in front of us of things that we can go and capture. I really don't get it, to be honest.
So like, what do you think will be the unlock to like capture the internet economy? Do you think it'll be like more UI things? Like, we just saw Blinks come out on Solana.
Yeah.
I actually had a tweet today that it's my first tweet ever that blew up outside of crypto Twitter. And I asked, it's fascinating. How did people onboard on the internet in the 90s? And like, what can crypto learn from that? And so like, basically like it's made its way out of the CT echo chamber and bubble. And what everyone is saying is AOL had this massive campaign where they mailed these CDs everywhere, and like 100 50 million American homes. They had them like they had them in magazines. There were campaigns, yep. And they basically physically got everyone online through the mail with these like CDs. And I'm thinking like in crypto, we have not had anything on that scale like that. This would be equivalent if like Ledger sent a ledger into like every home and said like go onboard.
Yeah.
But like, wow, I'm like imagine like if it happened in crypto is like would people just I guess it would be like signing up through like earn like $10 of stablecoins if you sign up with your Instagram account or Twitter account. I guess you're kind of seeing that with Privy right now and whatnot. But yeah, what I'm getting at is like, do you think it's like a UI problem? Like, where, how do you see like the internet? How do you see crypto engulfing and taking its territory in the internet economy?
Yeah, I think it's that's potentially a piece of it, right? And I imagine mm-hmm. that's something that like Coinbase could totally do, right? But the things that I'm actually more excited about are like, there's actually like lower hanging fruit, right?
Okay.
So many people spent so much time thinking about, for example, let's go and tokenize T-bills, let's go and tokenize US dollars, right? That's something that I would put in the bucket of like trying to bring them to us, right? One example of expanding into the internet economy is, for example, what Athena is doing, right? Like, let's go tokenize mm-hmm. this thing that's already within our control, that already exists within the internet, and let's go and just add that to this DeFi stack. That's why I think Athena has done so well versus a lot of these T-bill providers. And those T-bill providers are competing at such crazy, like, margin compression and all this stuff versus you go and study Athena, and it's actually extremely expansive to the entire, like, crypto landscape. So all of this to say, like, I just think that there's so much more interesting things to do than to go and beg institutions to come and buy our bags and instead give them a reason to buy, into things that are easier to do.
Got it. Do you see like other opportunities like Athena out there? Because Athena tokenized the basis trade. And I wonder if there's like what other things are out there.
Yeah, I have a... I'm working on a tweet thread to talk about this. I won't leak it yet. But
okay.
I'm trying to develop
a little
this
bit.
Model.
A little. You should talk it through on here or late in the podcast. Yeah, give us like an outline of your thoughts.
I mean, like at the TLDR, like I've described the basic argument, which is like, hey, look, these institutions, TradFi, all of this stuff. They don't really matter, right? Like they are here not because they want to go and help us and push forward crypto ideals, but because they think that they can make like 10 bips holding Bitcoin inside of somebody's 401k, right? Mm-hmm. Versus like, and that's fine and all, right? But it's just like the much more interesting thing to be doing is to be going and studying, okay, how can we actually go and make DeFi go up 100x? How can we make DeFi go up 10,000x? How can we make these chains actually something that people use on a daily basis such that people want to go and buy these coins, right? And the thing is, we're nowhere near there. How do we get there? It's not by going and putting this real world stuff on chain, because fun fact, you can already deal with real world stuff in current ways, right?
real world,
I'm not like not to say that there aren't a ton of advantages to putting it on chain, because I do believe that there are, right? Like stablecoin swapping between currency on chain is so powerful. Being able to do that in an atomic transaction and then go and send it to somebody in the same block, like that's so cool. But the much easier way to 1000x the industry is by looking at the internet, understanding where the money's at in the internet, whether that be inside of payments, whether that be inside of corporate accounts, whatever it may be, and going and attacking that specifically, right? And I think that why Athena was so great was because they understood a crypto native thing, which is that we want yield, right? And they said, okay, where is there a ton of yield? Okay, how can we put that in a token, right? That's some subset of the internet economy that they were able to capture, tokenize, and bring to us in DeFi, and they expanded DeFi because of that. Now, I imagine there will be many others in the coming years who come in and try and play this similar role.
Well said. Well said. Kit, what are you thinking right now? You have anything on your mind? Any thoughts?
No. I just love how this conversation, you know, evolved into this level, you know.
I know what I was going to say. This might sound ridiculous, but kind of what institutions are like if you're like to make it like chunk up. They're just like outsiders, like looking for their opportunity to extract, like providing like their service. Like imagine, like we're just on like, I guess like a dumber left curve level, just replace institutions with like celebs and celeb meme coins. They're just trying to go and extract values. Yeah. It's like really like, I wouldn't say like exactly the same in practice, but like if you chunk up a level, it's like coming from the outside, looking at the opportunity, like how can I make like a quick buck in the short term? Meanwhile, like the people that are like building within the space and how they should be thinking is like not thinking like looking for the outside, but let's look from within and like say, how can we like actually grow this 100x with the opportunities in front of us on chain and online?
Exactly.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I love where this conversation went. I think it's very poignant, especially at this time when like terms such as financial nihilism and like people are like wondering like, my bags, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. But like at the end of the day, we are really so early, and I've been banging this drum for a while. Like I truly do believe DeFi will underlie global finance. Like we're going to get there, and how we're going to get there and who's going to be the rails. That's a matter up for debate. And, you know, Royco is in quite the good position to come out with that. Speaking of which, like, do you have like a timeline? When you guys like, in a month, you said like, you think you guys are going to launch in a month. Is there any other dates that we should look out for? What should people look out for with Royco? Like, what can people do?
Yeah, just follow Royco Protocol on Twitter and you'll have access to all of the updates, all of the dates. You could also follow Royco Intern, who tweets too much and doesn't do enough work, to see even more details on our progress to getting there.
Okay, yeah, I think this is a good place to wrap up. But before we go, you already gave away the socials. I want to ask one question that we ask at the end of every interview. Who would you recommend as a guest? Who do you want to see on Flywheel?
This might be cliche, but mm-hmm. I think I really enjoy listening to Jesse from Coinbase talk about his strategy for Base. And specifically, he has a very good strategy. Like, he has a very interesting approach to how he's going to really bring 1 billion people on chain in the next couple years. Mm-hmm. And there's not many people thinking as big as Jesse in crypto today.
It's quite the statement. Yeah, we should definitely get him on. We'll figure that out after. But yeah, Jay, thank you so much for coming on. Super excited about this capital P primitive Royco you got cooking up over there. and we hope to see you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Postgame Show. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with capital K. We are wrapping up a really spicy interview at the end with Jay there. Like, really some hot takes. Like, man, it's like I put my hand on the stove and it was too hot. But I really enjoyed the end of that interview. I think Royco is a fascinating protocol. Truly a capital P primitive. Yeah, Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
Man, as I was reading the docs, bro, like first thing that came to my mind was like, oh my god, this is Vodium before the other side. Yeah, it truly made me feel that way. Because it made so much sense, because voting was only one-sided. It's only like all the LP or the incentive providers
and it
giving
seems
out the
so
price.
Obvious. It
yeah,
seems
so obvious.
It's always obvious in hindsight.
Yeah, it is. And also, you know what was crazier is that Vodium operates on a 2-week basis, right? We're going from a 2-week kind of epoch window down to a per block basis for liquidity bidding, which is what? Right. Like, dude, it's so obvious in hindsight. You're absolutely right about that.
No, it's crazy. I actually remember I was at the Van Eck conference or summit in at USC like several months ago, and I mm-hmm. saw Jay there. And this is when Jay first came up with his idea. And honestly, like when he was saying it back then, I was still in the early formation, so he's still like trying to find the right way to
flesh
that.
Yeah.
So he was like fleshing it out, but he was like really excited about something. I'm just like, I'm not sure what he's saying, but he's cooking. And then like once I started doing my research into it, you know, I saw the DeFi Dad interview. Shout out DeFi Dad, friend of the show. Reading the docs, I'm like, wow, this just like makes sense. And this is like made me really excited, and you know, I'm happy to see him building back in DeFi. I mean, I know he had his thing. And he still has this thing with Waymont,
and you know, kind of going to the other side. But now he's like come for full circle back around, not only to DeFi, but kind of like, in a way, this is like yield. You're aggregating yields because you're aggregating ask.
Aggregating liquidity, aggregating ask. Like, but I'm just imagining like the UI for this got to be like chef's kiss.
It has to be. Yeah.
It can get super complicated really quickly. And especially like, cause he said each market would have its own liquidity pool. So like the ETH on Compound is going to have its own order book versus the ETH on Aave versus the ETH on XYZ. Right. And that's going to be like really confusing.
Every asset like too, is it like AUSDC or like CUSDT?
Yeah. Every asset would have its own liquidity pool, and depending on how much you're willing to pay for that piece of liquidity, right?
It's going to get really hairy.
And I didn't get a chance to ask about like IL, right? Like, you know, impermanent loss.
I mean,
what happens?
If it's an order book, there's like...
No, Dave. Like, the order book is for the liquidity. It's not for what you're going to do with the liquidity.
Does that matter?
Right? Of course it does. Because I mean, if you're going to rent like $100, let's say you're going to borrow 100 ETH from me to go and pair it with Dave Coin. And then let's say Dave Coin just completely nukes. Yeah, on Dave Chain, of course, on Aave Chain. And then it just completely nukes. Now, at the time for me to pull the liquidity out, I'm only going to be able to pull the, you know, the dollar value of it, but not my 100 ETH quantity, right? The quantity is going to be less because, well, that ETH is gone because someone else swapped it, you know, and I have a ton of Daycoin. I didn't get a chance to ask about that.
Oh, so you're talking about the IO, like, happening, like, moment to moment. I wonder if it'll just be, like, single, like, this, like, I hear stablecoins. The stablecoins will be used for, like, this purpose. But, oh, that's actually real tricky.
But let's say I'm offering, like, you know, Davecoin is offering 500% APY for this, right? Because you know it's going to have IL. But then they're going to offer a ludicrous yield. So I think there's always a market for that, right? There's always somebody willing to LP the pool. Like, look at all the meme coins, for example, right? So, you know, just something to consider.
Yeah, that is a good point.
The first rollout will probably be single-sided, you know, like you were suggesting. Probably the first rollout, single-sided, and then it goes a little crazier once things are a bit more onboarded. But have you seen his – did you join the wait list?
I didn't join the wait list.
Oh, dude, go check out the wait list. Like, their UI is pretty sick.
I did see the wait list.
Yeah, right? They added up all the value of the wallets, and then they showed, like, how much is, like, waiting to be deployed, which I thought was, like, pretty clever. To be honest,
that's clever.
Pretty clever.
Yeah, it's like TVL before TVL. Like TVR, like ready.
It's like the points of TVLs.
Yeah, you know? I thought it was interesting what you're saying about like in his take on institutions and traditional capital. He's basically like, we don't need them. They're coming to extract anyway. Like, let's build cool shit from within. You know, go after the internet economy, which is in our territory, in our turf, and like from there. They'll be clamoring at our door. You kind of see that happening, honestly, with stablecoins. Yeah. I wonder if it could happen faster. I think we all want it to happen faster and there'd be better UX, UI. But I thought, you know, I can support them behind that.
Yeah, see, but here's the crazy part, though. Like, I thought about it a bit more. We should do these post games like a couple hours later so I can, you know, kind of let it marinate.
Yeah.
But I was like, imagine everyone is so bearish when I'm like, hey, I'm going to put Uber on the blockchain. That is the internet economy, right? But when you kind of hear that, you think of like, oh my God, that's so bearish. That's probably not going to work. I know there's a Solana project. I'm not throwing shade, but I'm just saying the general connotation of like a X but on chain has always been poo-poo, you know?
Since the ICO days.
Yeah, the internet economy is, there's some nuances to
the
to
internet
that.
Thinks.
Yeah, the internet, yeah, right? The IoT internet of digital got things. Rebranded to D-Pins, you know?
D-Pin. So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can write that quote down. But anyways, that is the post game. Thank you, everyone, for watching and supporting us 2 years down the line. If you want to follow everything Flywheel, want to catch up with everything, make sure you follow all of our social media at Flywheel DeFi on Twitter, TikTok, Telegram, YouTube. On YouTube, go ahead, hit that like button, subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at ZeroXCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.